Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Monday, August the 8th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to talk about China and Taiwan, the 50-50 Senate does it again, migrants in New York City, and I guess a little feud there between the mayor of New York City and the governor of Texas, Liz Cheney. Her career could be over tomorrow in Wyoming, and crime in the city. A big problem, but a bigger problem is the shortage of police officers, the number of police officers who don't want to be police officers anymore, and that's becoming a real problem. But we got a couple of breaking stories. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, reasonably well, Silvio. Reasonably well.
Well, I mentioned we have a couple of breaking stories, and the first one is the passing of David McCullough, the great historian who wrote that book about President Truman and other books, too. I remember him on The American Experience. He was a guest or a moderator of that show many times. And the book that he wrote about President Truman is still regarded as one of the best biographies or presidential biographies ever. But he was just a great guy. I loved every time he was on TV. I loved watching him, Bill.
Yes, he also was a good TV guest. He spoke well, and he could explain the stories in his books. Yes, he did. He was a popular historian. We have a tradition of popular historians in this country that I think has been very good for us. People who know how to access information and deliver it in a way that the general public can understand. Another popular historian would be Bruce Catton, who wrote about the Civil War. Some others, Douglas Southall Freeman. They are not academic historians, but they are popular historians who've made their mark.
Absolutely. And the other, this literally broke here in the last hour, is the passing of Olivia Newton-John, the very popular singer of the late 70s or early 80s. She also made movies like Grease. A very popular young woman back then, sold over 100 million records, 5 number one songs on Billboard. Now, she had been ill for some time, so this is not a shock with Olivia. She died of cancer and had been, I had heard about that in the news, that she was not doing well for quite some time. But she was very popular, too. That's 40 years ago, but she was hugely popular, Bill.
Oh, she was. I remember when Grease came out. She
yes.
And now I forget the name
Travolta,
of the melody.
John Travolta. Yes.
They made a great combination, and that was the era when movies would try to feature a pair who could go on either to other movies or together. You remember in an earlier era, you had Frank Avalon and so they called them the beach movies. Annette Funicello.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Avalon. So it was part of a tradition. Yes, and she was very good. She was a very good singer. I don't think she was, if I recall, that she was American. I believe she was either British or Australian. Do you know?
Yes, she was born in Australia. She came up from Australia and then had some hits in the 70s, but really hit the jackpot, as they say, with the movie Grease.
Yes.
A very popular movie, like you indicated. So a couple of the prominent people, I guess, that we listened to or read about, David McCullough and Olivia Newton-John. So rest in peace to both of them. But that leads me to a question, Bill. You worked in the New York Times, and the New York Times has a reputation for great obituaries. And I know that I love them. Whenever somebody famous dies, I always go to the New York Times and try to read their obituary. Is that a special type of journalist who gets hired in that department? I mean, how does that happen, Bill?
I don't know if they hire for a journalist to do obits. All journalists at some point in their career have done obits. There are obits and then there are pre-obits, which are obituaries written before the person dies. If it's a famous person, the New York Times will prepare most of the obit even years before that person's death, so that when the person dies, they don't have to do it all from the beginning. They have it ready to be used. But the man who really invented the modern obituary at the New York Times was an editor named Alden Whitman. And his belief was that the obituary was as important as any other news story, that it should be well-written, that it should be a real story of a real person and bring that person alive. And yes, people look to the New York Times for their obituaries. I always kind of wonder when those things appear, how much of the original material is used, whether sometimes things are cut out because they're embarrassing to the individual. Those are decisions that obituary writers have to make all the time. People aren't perfect, and you may get an obituary, for example, for, let's say, Nelson Mandela. And the question is, do you put in the perhaps not favorable things as well as the favorable? And the Times really over the years developed ways of doing that. I recall one obituary, I believe it was for Margaret Burke White, the very famous photographer. I think she was the first woman to break through in photographic journalism. Worked for Life magazine. I think the first issue of Life had a Margaret Burke White picture on it. On its cover, and she was generally considered a very fine person, but she did have some personal bigotries that reflected the period. Not strong, she wasn't a hater, but the Times had to make a decision as to how that could be brought into the story to make the obituary accurate and yet not hurt her, because they didn't feel that she was really out to hurt anybody. And I think that they used a phrase like she was susceptible to the prejudices of her time, and I think they just left it at that. I will tell you a good story if you want to hear one.
Yeah, please, please.
That I overheard. I was working as an editor in the Sunday department at the Times, and a reporter came in. I sat right next to a man named Will Wang, who did the crossword puzzle, and on the other side was Sam Falk, who was a legendary photographer who caroused with Babe Ruth. So I had a lot of good gossip. And a reporter came in one day, and he said, you know, he knew Will Wang, the puzzle guy, very well. He said, you know, Will, I just did a biography, a pre-obit on this individual, and I just can't believe what I heard. And he said, well, what are you talking about? Well, I mean, here is this person of great stature, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the interview, she started out with this vibrant, vituperative anti-Semitism. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, coming from her. And I wondered, having heard that story live, as it happened, whether when the individual died, they would put it into the story. And eventually the individual did die, and it was not put in the story. And I felt that was wrong, because if she had these prejudices, that was part of her life. Now, you'll want to know who the person was. And now that she's gone, I can say it. It was the anthropologist Margaret Mead, famous anthropologist. And she, after all, was familiar with races around the world. And she started making these horrible comments, like anybody who calls themselves the chosen people deserve exactly what they get. I mean, really, stuff that. And it never appeared in the paper. I felt it was a mistake that they could have put it in some way, saying she was, you know, but as with Margaret Burke White, she was susceptible to certain prejudices. That's all. But those are decisions that are very, very tough for him. You can get a very beloved figure, and yet a figure who may have had a negative side. On the other hand, you could have a figure who was perhaps disliked. Even, you know, like one of the Hollywood monsters who did wonderful things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those are editorial decisions, I guess, that are made.
Yes.
But I, you know, as a reader of, you know, we get the Dallas Morning News here, And I mean, they don't do a lot of obituaries. The national ones, I guess, they just pick up from their from news services. But I have to confess that I do what many people do. I don't think I'm alone on this. That I always look in the obituary and see if I recognize anybody. And a couple of times I have.
Sure.
A couple of times I have. You know, I remember one day we were having breakfast and my wife said, "Did you know that such and such died?" And I said, "No, when did that happen?" I guess she said yesterday. And it was a business friend of mine. So I contacted his family and went to the funeral. But I would have never learned that other than through the obituary section. So I look at it, and, you know, sometimes I wonder if other people do it, but I guess I'm not alone, Bill, and checking, let's see whose face you recognize. A lot of times what I've noticed is if it's a veteran, like if it's a war veteran, they'll put the picture, his war veteran picture, his soldier picture, I guess that's what I'm saying. And that is always nice to see the veteran picture, Bill.
I agree with you. I check obituaries all the time. And one of the things I like to know, for example, is if somebody I'm writing about or some historical figure is still alive. And of course, the internet is the place to go. And you can usually find out not only about famous people, but sometimes you can look up a friend of yours, and sometimes because of services conducted by or provided by funeral parlors or by religious institutions, that person might be listed. So I did learn about even a former friend who I didn't know that she was dead. But that's a very interesting area, the obituary area.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very popular, and I don't know. You know, that is one area where the print copy, I think for me at least, the print copy is better than the digital. I don't know if I'm alone here, but do you agree with me that being able to hold a paper and read it is better than seeing the digital? I don't know. Does it make any difference to you?
I think it gives it a permanence. I learned of the deaths of two formerly close friends who I drifted apart from, who both were killed in an accident at the same time. And I learned about it months after it happened because there was an article about them in the paper. And yes, I think it gives you a sense of permanence. Also, not all newspapers are online. So if you look at the newspaper, you may be seeing a lot of people who may not make it onto the internet.
Yeah, well, one thing you can do with the print copy is that you can cut the copy and save it.
Yes,
that, you know,
and people do.
And I know that that's something I've done. Or if I, for example, when a few years ago, when somebody that was a friend of my father and me passed away here, I cut the obituary from the paper and took it to my father, who was not familiar with his death. So I've always enjoyed print copy for that reason. I'm not saying that the digital doesn't work, but I guess I still like print. I guess I'm old school, old generation, I don't know. But I still like print. And I'm not quite – I haven't quite made the full transition yet to digital. I still pay for a subscription to a newspaper, Bill.
Yes, well, I'll tell you, I think that some of the best journalism in America can be found in local papers.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right about that.
If it's a real paper. If it's a real paper. Now, you get some local papers that are just cheerleaders. You know, they don't want to lose any readers, so everybody is wonderful, you know. You know, Adolf Hitler died in our town yesterday. He loved animals.
That's right. Yeah, he was such a generous man. You know, he fed all the German shepherds in the community. Yes.
Right.
I know, yeah. No, but what's happening, though, now that you mentioned local newspapers, I wanted to say this. What is happening here in North Texas is that you have one major newspaper, the Dallas Morning News. It's a survivor. There used to be another one called the Star Teller. No, there was another one called I cannot remember the name of the other one, but it died about 30 years ago.
The Fort Worth.
Well, the Fort Worth Star Telegram, I believe, is still running in Fort Worth.
Oh, maybe.
But anyway, I cannot remember the other name. And what's funny about that other newspaper that passed away 30 years ago is on the day that President Kennedy was killed, that newspaper had lots and lots of reporting on his assassination, of course, and some journalists that later on went on to become famous were on that paper. I guess they became famous because they were covering the assassination. One of them is a fellow at CBS whose name I cannot remember right now. Not Dan Rather, but there was another one at CBS who became very famous, who used to work in that newspaper. And I remember watching a documentary about that time and seeing him. Hopefully I'll remember his name before the hour is over. But what we're seeing here as far as newspapers is you have the major newspaper, and that newspaper, the Dallas Morning News, keeps getting smaller and smaller every day. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, yes.
There's just not that many pages. And then you have a bunch of little town newspapers, like neighborhood newspapers, who cover, you know, the local high school team, and but they're full of ads. And I sometimes wonder if they are really a newspaper or just a place to read about the latest food ads here or there, Bill.
Well, yes, that is a problem with some local papers. Another problem they have is covering the arts, which is a very difficult thing for a local paper. We lived in a town which had, and my wife was a big participant in, a summer theater for teenagers and college students. And they would put on a musical that ran for 2 weeks, and that paper would have to review it. Now, no local newspaper is going to pan the performance of a local child.
No.
I mean, they found other ways of saying it. You know, I mean, they'd lose all their readers overnight. So they would find ways of saying, and Joey Jones was vibrant in the role, or convincing.
Right. Well, then we find out later on that she's the daughter of the fellow who owns the used car dealer that advertises heavily in the local newspaper.
A very very common situation. In fact, the writer Adolph Green, who worked with Betty Comden, wrote a lot of the musicals that made Hollywood famous. He actually started a collection of things that people can say at a performance that are not untrue, but don't reflect your real feelings. You know, if you went to your friend's opening night and you didn't like his show, you would say that show. I mean,
right.
you're not saying anything,
right.
Or you did it before and you did it again. Things
right.
like that.
Or
the neutral comment.
My favorite one is how was the movie? Oh, interesting. Very interesting,
movie.
Yeah, that's my favorite way of saying, you know what? That must be another one they invented, I assume.
Well, that was when I worked in Hollywood, I always told people, the one word you don't want to hear out here is interesting. You know, you know it's going down because that's the word they always use. Oh, that's interesting. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, anyway, I know. But there are
wonderful comments, and they're used in newspapers, but they're used especially in reviews. The best one was there was a play. Was it called I Am a Camera? I think it was. I think it was called I Am a Camera. It was about Germany. I can't. And there was a famous camera made, it still is made, called the Leica camera. It was one of the finest made. And the reviewer for the New York Times at that time was Walter Kerr, who was also one of my teachers. And the play, as I said, was called I Am a Camera. And his review was one line, me no Leica.
I like that. That's very original, to say the least. Well, anyway, I just wanted to ask you about obituaries because I know they're a very important part of the paper. But let's talk about some current events. China and Taiwan, you know, I think once the speaker said she was going, she had to go. But they could have done this differently, don't you think, Bill? They could have held back the information a little bit and I mean, we were talking about her going for like 3 weeks. I mean, I think that was a little bit in your face, China. They probably didn't mean it that way, but that's how it came out, Bill.
Well, the administration handled it in the worst possible way. She is the Speaker of the House. She is the head of a separate branch of government. I may not like her, but she is the head of that branch of government. And the president comes out and says, when all this talk was going on that she would go to Taiwan, he said, well, the Secretary of Defense doesn't want her to. That's a terrible thing to say. You're undercutting the person who's third in line for the presidency. And what he should have said was something like, she's the speaker, she makes her own decisions. And that's it. That's all he should have said. But to say that the Defense Department or the Secretary of Defense was against it, that's just not something we do. That's amateurish, very amateurish.
Yeah. Well, I remember when then Newt Gingrich, Speaker, went to Taiwan, I don't remember any controversy. Now, granted, that was back in 97, but it looks to me like it was handled differently back then. He didn't try to go around the administration. He went to Taiwan, but there was no controversy, as I recall, Bill, when he went to Taiwan. And I don't know of anybody else who's been to Taiwan. Not that many people go there from administrations, but I just don't think they handled it well. I mean, I think once she was there, I'm okay with what she did, and I'm okay with her going. But it just seems to me that they could have handled it a little bit better. And I was listening to a joke today that, of course, the speaker is number three on the line of succession. And the joke is that she was over there reminding everybody that the top two aren't that good, but she's ready to take over if they need to.
Well, she conducted herself better than Kamala Harris has ever conducted herself. I mean, she is old. She is old, and she does occasionally forget something. But at least she's coherent, and that's not. You can't necessarily say that about the top two.
No, especially.
But how about that speech, Kamala?
That's right. Well, that was an interesting speech by the vice president. You know?
Yes.
right. No, but I guess the Chinese have they actually stopped firing missiles? I know they were firing a few missiles there for a couple of days and practicing an invasion. I think it's pretty much quieted down, Bill, as I understand.
As of this morning, they still were engaged in some type of exercises. I mean, they're not flying over Taiwan. They're not intercepting Taiwanese aircraft and forcing them down. It's an overreaction to Pelosi's visit, but they wanted to make sure there never will be another one again. And that's not true. We'll do it again if we have to.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, I just saw a headline flashing through that Olivia Newton-John had been battling cancer for 30 years. So that she had. I guess she was diagnosed as a young woman many years ago. Well, let's talk a little bit about the 50-50 Senate. I'm not sure why Senator Manchin did this. He really surprised a lot of people, especially Republicans, by cutting this deal with Schumer. But then when they called the bill the Inflation Reduction Bill, and Bernie Sanders comes out and says, no, this really doesn't reduce inflation. I don't know. Senator Manchin must be wondering why he did this bill. Or unless there's something in there for West Virginia that I haven't heard about. Maybe there's something in there for West Virginia that I'm not familiar with. But you have to wonder, what is he getting out of this bill?
I had read that there was some little thing for West Virginia. But as the facts became known, it is a bill that can destroy the West Virginia coal mining industry. And why he would do that, I have no idea. I have no idea either. I mean, there have been these photographs of him in the last few days with the deer in the headlights. Is this to say, what, me? I did something? And it is believed that this could cost him his job. I think he's up for election in 2024. Yeah. And the Republicans could probably run a good campaign against him.
Well, the last time, if you remember, Bill, he got in with 48% of the vote because there was a third party candidate. He would have been defeated in 2020 or 2018 or whatever. But I thought he was, you know, in so many ways, one of the most responsible people in the Senate, and maybe he still is. But this whole incident, I mean, it seems to me that if you're going to save the Democrats, but you represent a state that President Trump won by 30 points, I don't think that's a very smart thing to do, Bill.
I don't think it was either, but it did pass. It did pass because the vice president broke the tie, and this legislation is now on the books, and it isn't. It doesn't look like a very good piece of legislation. But the fact is also that as the weeks go by, the Democrats are getting stronger in the polls. That's been noticed in the generic poll 2 weeks ago. In the Rasmussen generic poll, the Republicans were up 10 points. Then it was they were up by 3 points last week, and now it's they're up by, I think, 0.2 of a point. The Democrats are gaining, and the Republicans are aware of it. And in individual state elections, there is not much polling on new nominees, but the Democrats have their hands full. The Republicans have their hands full with very poor candidates. They were very good within the party, which is how they got the nomination, but some of them are extremists. They really are. The one from Michigan, for example, who I think could defeat Governor Whitmer, who should be defeated. She's one of the worst governors in the country. But the Republican nominee is not only pro-life. That's fine to be pro-life. It's a pro-life party. But she is against abortion under any circumstances, including rape and incest. Almost everybody, even people who are pro-life, will make an exception and say, well, except in cases of rape or incest or to save the life of the mother. That's usually the phrase that's used. No, she says she is against it in all circumstances. That can cost her the election because it's a big issue among Democrats, but, you know, they understand that there are going to be restrictions. But when you want a total ban, that gets their juices flowing. And it's not going to happen anyway because the country is moving toward the point of accepting some abortions up to a certain month, but increasing the number of restrictions. And I think, Ronald Reagan used to say, if I've got 80% of a deal, I have a very good deal. And some of these people ought to be taught that lesson.
Well, and that's true. And the only good news, of course, is that the campaigns have not actually started yet. They're not really starting until Labor Day. I was listening to Selena Zito morning.
Yes.
And she's been campaigning a lot, or not campaigning, but covering the campaign in Pennsylvania. And she thinks that race there is a lot closer than the polls are indicating. But again, I think you're right. The one in Pennsylvania for the Senate.
For the Senate. Okay. The governorship race is I don't know how close that is, but it's interesting because the governorship candidate on the Republican side is not a good candidate, whereas the Democratic candidate is. But the Senate seat is important. That's a Republican seat, and they may lose it. But you cannot lose that seat.
If you lose the seat in Pennsylvania, then you got to pick up two others. You have to have two, and that becomes more complicated. But you know, she was optimistic, and she's one of those reporters who actually goes out and talks to people. And
yes,
she's
that's
been
what I like
basically
about her.
Driving everywhere, and she felt that election was a lot closer. But you're right about abortion. I'll say this. Look, I'm pro-life. Being Catholic, I'm against abortion. But I also understand as a practical matter that politically you have to have access to abortion. So my feeling has always been, have access in the case of incest or rape, or at least give women that option. They don't have to do it if they don't want to, but at least they have the option. And then have some kind of a limitation, 10 weeks, 15 weeks. I think that's where we're going. And
honestly, Bill, I think in
5 years, that's where what the whole country will be like. You know, abortion in 15 weeks will be just like Europe.
Yes. Yes, Europe actually was used as an example by the feminist movement early in the abortion discussions in the 60s to be the ideal because they were, quote, very progressive on abortion. But you'll notice the feminist movement doesn't talk about Europe much anymore because they went in the other direction and became more pro-life. Also, in Europe, you may not, and there are some certain countries in which the decision is not made entirely by the mother, but they have to have a medical panel approve it. And that is not something they would, the feminists would accept here. So yes, I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle, and it will, that will be the, in effect, the final decision of the people. But the
we're going in that direction.
Well, if you take a reasoned position, even if you take a position that is a pro-life position, which we should take in our on our side, and the pro-choice people don't like it. If it's a thoughtful position, they generally forgive you for it. But if it's a rigid position, they don't. And that's what brings out those Democratic voters. Now, in the case of Pennsylvania, the Senate candidate on the Republican side is Dr. Oz. He is well known to the public for his appearances on television, but he is apparently not a very good campaigner, and he really isn't from Pennsylvania, or at least recently hasn't lived in Pennsylvania. So he is behind, but I hope he catches up because we have to keep that seat.
Yeah, well, Selena Zito was saying today on her interview on the Hugh Hewitt show, she's on there every week, and she was saying that Dr. Oz was doing a lot of retail politics, and he's everywhere in all these little towns. And the Senate, the Democrat, is still recovering from a stroke that he had, and nobody has really seen him that much. So that we will see. But I think you're right. I understand your concern about some of these candidates. We're going to take a little break, Bill. When we come back, got a lot more to get into with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, let me just take you back a little bit to 1974, but if we were doing this show in 1974, we'd be talking about the fact that President Nixon was going to be speaking to the nation tonight, announcing his resignation. That's 48 years ago, Bill. Is that amazing how time can fly? 48 years. I remember driving home from school and watching the speech. Do you remember what you were doing that night? Do you remember watching the speech?
I don't actually remember it. I don't remember watching it live. I probably did. I'm sure I did. Let's see. That would have been 1974. I would have already been out as a freelance writer. I'm sure I watched it. But I can't specifically remember it. He made the speech, and then he made another little speech at the airport when he was leaving. It was the first time in American history that the president had resigned. And he did it to avoid the impeachment trial. I think they told him, look, if you are impeached, you're going to be removed. And he knew the right thing to do was to resign. Not only for his own good, but for the country's good. You don't want to put the country through an impeachment trial. And person who became vice president, the vice president at that time was Gerald Ford, who became president. We were lucky that it was Gerald Ford because Nixon's original vice president was
Agnew,
former governor Agnew,
Spiro Agnew,
And he was a nasty guy. He really was. He had been governor of Maryland, and Ford was a much classier character, and I think made a much better president.
Well, one thing I remember about that whole time is you're right. He gave the speech the next day. He gave President Nixon had like a little farewell speech at the White House. I remember he was with his family, and one of his daughters was crying. I remember. And then they walked to the helicopter, And I thought President Ford was really classy and elegant in how he said goodbye to him and walked with him to the helicopter. I thought the whole thing was done with such class, considering
yes.
how complicated it was. I mean, you're saying goodbye to a president who's leaving in a scandal, you know, and yet President Ford, I thought, was really classy, which I think goes back to your point that he was the right man at the right time, because that's exactly what the country needed, just a guy like Gerald Ford. So I was very proud of him for that.
Yes, and it was also noted at the time that his election or his re-election in 1972 was a landslide re-election. I think he covered, I believe he won every state but
four,
one.
Yeah, four, 49, but Massachusetts was the only one he lost. But he
yes,
carried 49
yes.
states, and he got over 60% of the popular vote. I think it was 61% of the popular vote. I mean, it was
yes.
it was the kind of victory that you don't see in, because, I mean, even Eisenhower got the 57% in his,
yes.
he was very popular. So when you
I
get
think,
over 60%, that's a lot.
Yes. I don't know what Reagan got in 1984. That was 59. Also a landslide election.
Yeah, he
59%.
Got 59%. That, yeah, 59. He was just barely under 60. I was looking this up the other day because I was curious. About this, but yeah, Reagan. Look, that was an even bigger landslide than Nixon, and he got 59. Almost, he didn't quite make it to 60. You know, they rounded up, but he didn't quite make it to 60.
Yeah,
he was 59 plus. But yeah, I mean, that was big too. But yeah, I mean, I just thought all I can tell you, I remember Bill that day that we had a friend from Venezuela who was visiting, a business friend of my father who was visiting. And I remember we were having dinner, and this friend was so impressed with the way the United States had handled this transition. He said,
yeah.
my gosh, there were no tanks in the streets. I mean, it was such a classy transition. So I just remember hearing that, you know, my father's friend putting it that way, Bill. And I felt like, well, yeah, I mean, in other countries, that doesn't happen that way, Bill.
Well, you're right. I mean, we are one of the few who can do a transition smoothly. The European countries can, too, the West European countries. The Brits do it well. Often it begins with a vote of no confidence in Commons, and the rest is they go on. I happen to have been in Greece, in Athens, Greece, 1 year, and the King of Greece came into our hotel. And I saw him, I met him, and 1 day later he was overthrown.
Wow. Amazing.
No, it was apparently it was a complete surprise because my hotel was right next door to the parliamentary center of Greece, and he was out by within 1 day. I hate to say it, it was exciting to see. I felt sorry for him. I mean, I hope he had a house to go to or something, but he was overthrown by the colonels, who did not make a very good group of government leaders. But they overthrew him, and that was that.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your city of New York. A couple of problems. One is migrants arriving in a bus. The mayor is angry at our governor for that. But I think an even bigger problem, Bill, is you wrote about this today, is the police shortages. I mean, you've got major cities who are no longer can put together a police force. They don't have enough people serving, or they're retiring early. I think this is a big problem, and it could be a huge political problem in many of these elections, particularly governor's elections and so on. I hope that Lee Zeldin in New York makes a big issue out of this, what's happening in New
I
York
hope so
and
too.
The number of police officers who are leaving the force. But I mean, that doesn't make you feel comfortable if they're losing 1,000 officers in a city like New York, Bill.
Oh, no. The New York is short of officers, and there is very low morale in the police department. They have a female police commissioner for the first time in the city's history. I kind of like her when she makes public appearances. I don't know how well she's running the department, but I do know that morale is low. A lot of people want to leave. Some people are leaving before their 20-year pension period is up. which means they will lose most of their pension, but they just can't stand the circumstances anymore. They know that the city council doesn't have their back. City council is very left-wing in New York. They know that the mayor, who was a cop, he was a captain in the New York Police Department, he has said the right things about this. He said the right things. The trouble with Adams is he doesn't have the power or the following to do the right things. Many things he wants to do, like getting rid of some of these bail reform laws, which have caused a great deal of recidivism, he doesn't have the power to do it. Only the state legislature can. Only the state legislature, I'm sorry, not the state legislature, but the governor can fire a district attorney. In some states you have recall, but in New York it can be done only by the governor, and she has been asked to fire the district attorney of Manhattan, who is a real George Soros type, and she hasn't done it yet, because even though a lot of people dislike him, there are also people on the other side, on the far left side of the party, who want him to remain. So Adams has a very difficult job. I mean, I don't know who to compare him to, but he does not get the support in Albany, which is our state capital, that he needs.
Well, but maybe he should be rooting then for Lee Zeldin to be the next governor, because I think Zeldin will support him and try to do something. Because I don't understand how you can lose police officers like that and not have a – I mean, people are going to start – having to carry guns to defend themselves, Bill.
I'm afraid you're right. And New York is a no-gun city, but the police have thinned out. We don't have the size force on patrol that we used to. And in addition, many police officers are reluctant to get involved in street crimes, because they know they can be charged with something. And you have neighborhoods in New York that are anti-police because the leaders tell them to be anti-police. And so a guy watches something, a fight, and he's very slow to walk over, because they know that even though the people are battling each other, punching each other, they can turn on him both and say police brutality. So a very bad situation, very, very bad.
Very bad situation. I would think it's a very bad situation for business owners, small business owners like Bodega.
Very much so.
The fellow who was involved in that Bodega incident, I guess, went back to the Dominican Republic and said, I'm out of here. And he flew back to live in the Dominican Republic. But, I mean, these small business owners, these small shops that are so – you know, so characteristic of New York City. You walk around these neighborhoods and you see all these small shops. They've got to be worried about all of this, because they, you know, they could count on the police before, but not anymore. I mean, the police may not get there on time, Bill.
That's right. And also, there may not be any police available to take the call.
Right.
I know that in certain cities, beyond a certain point, if every police detail is busy, people can call 911 and get an answering machine, and that's awful in an emergency. But there are still powerful forces that want to defund the police.
That's right. You're right, and that's got to be awful. You're in the middle of an emergency. You call 911, and you get a recording saying, "Please leave your name, and we'll call you back." But you're not going to lose your place in the list. You know,
yes,
we'll call you back in
the
order you called in. Like, you know, the other day I was calling my phone company because I had an issue with my caller ID, and they say that we're, you know, experiencing very heavy schedule and are very busy, but if you leave your number, we will call you back, and you will not lose your place in the line. And, I mean, okay, so I left my number, and they called me back, and everything was fine. But that's one thing when it's the phone company. It's quite another thing when it's 911, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. 911 is supposed to be lickety-split, and there's supposed to be people on duty available. Usually people call 911 either because they see a crime committed, but mostly for medical help. And that's critical, you know, save a person's life. So New York doesn't feel like New York anymore. I don't know if it's going to ever recover because, you know, they say, well, it's a tourist attraction. But if it's a tourist attraction, it has to attract tourists. And when the very thing that attracts tourists are going out of business or fading away, the theater is very weak right now. Ticket prices are out of sight. And for what? I mean, a lot of the plays and the musicals have either closed because of the pandemic or are running abbreviated runs. A lot of restaurants have closed. Restaurants are the riskiest business in New York. They have the highest failure rate. And with all the things that have happened with the pandemic, a lot closed. Now we have new restrictions because of the other flu that's coming out, the monkey flu or the monkey pox that's coming out, and there is very low morale among the people of New York. It just isn't our city anymore.
Right. Well, I don't think people understand how important for a tourist it is to go somewhere and feel safe, because if you're going to go somewhere like. Especially New York, you know, a lot of the night activities. You go to New York and you go out to eat and you go to a play. And if you're walking down the sidewalk or wherever you're walking and you don't feel safe, I don't think you're going to come back, Bill. I think you're going to say, you know what, we're not coming back to Broadway if it's not safe. And that's
right.
Something that really, I mean, security, that sense of security that you had under Giuliani. I mean, people tell me, under Giuliani, you could go anywhere without any problems, but not anymore, Bill.
That's right. That's right. The crimes were punished. The police did a great job of tracking down perps and arresting them. Now you have this bail reform thing where somebody commits a serious crime and they're out in 10 minutes. And it's enraging
Amazing.
People. And yet, here is the complication. On Election Day, a lot of the very people who are frightened will go to the polls and elect a Democrat, because that's what they've
right.
always done.
Right, or they fear they have to do. You wonder sometimes how much intimidation there is
I think there's
in all of that, Bill. I think there is. Well, one last topic, Bill. Liz Cheney, it appears that she's going down in the primary tomorrow night in Wyoming. Not really surprised. I've always loved the... Yeah, I always liked Liz Cheney. I always thought she was a very capable representative. I'm a big fan of her father, who I thought did a nice job as vice president. But Liz Cheney really put herself in this boat, in this situation, Bill, when
she
participated in this investigation. I'm not against the investigation, but if she had said to Nancy Pelosi, no, I'm not going to participate unless we do this right, I don't think she'd be losing tomorrow night, Bill.
That's quite possible. I have only met her once, and I am also a fan of her father. I've always thought Dick Cheney was a fine public servant. I met her once. I have to tell you, she's a little on the cold side, and I think that's part of this. There's nothing warm about her or engaging. The one time I met her, I just wasn't impressed. So she may leave that impression with her voters, and even maybe some of the people who are colleagues in the Congress. They may not love her. I think she got the job in the first place as a member of the leadership because of her name. I mean, I think the Cheney meant something. The name Cheney meant something in the party, but I don't think it means anything anymore, unfortunately. But I think she's probably a goner. And I don't know much about the replacement. She's always asking for money, but I don't know much about her. But the seat will stay Republican. The seats we have to worry about are the seats that can be flipped by the Democrats, or the seats that should be flipped Republican but are not going to be flipped because of a bad candidate. I mean, you take, for example, Georgia. Georgia is a conservative state, but my God, they've got two liberal Democratic senators. Herschel Walker has not turned out to be a very good candidate. He's getting better, apparently, because they're rehearsing him. But at least the guy, the Democrat, who is a very heavily racialized left-wing Democrat, but at least he presents himself reasonably well. Herschel, you know, he doesn't really know the issues that well. He's ducking a debate, which is something that always is costly because people wonder what you're trying to hide. But that should be an easy seat. And there are several easy seats that are open, and the Republicans are having a hard time getting them because their candidate isn't very good.
Right. I just wish that every Republican who is running this year was like the fellow from New Mexico, whose father or grandfather was a senator there at one time. I can't think of the name right now, but he was at one time he was being considered by then candidate Reagan to be the vice president before he picked Gerald Ford. I can't think of the fellow before he picked George Bush.
I can't remember.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
He's a top-notch candidate. He's exactly the kind of guy I wish we had 20 like him, who are very serious people who understand the issues. These are not flakes, who understand the issues. But I think you're right. If they don't pick up the Senate, it won't be because it'll be because of bad candidates or people who really were not ready. As I mentioned before, it's only the beginning of August, and I think people will focus more on the campaign after Labor Day, so hopefully things will look better. But, yeah, there's a problem in Pennsylvania. There's a problem in Georgia, although, we'll see what happens. Those two are critical. You cannot lose those two because then you've got to make up a couple of victories somewhere else. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. We always check it, always enjoy reading it. And
thank you.
Did you hear anything, by the way? Did you do any inquiring about the weather, the hurricanes coming up? What's the latest on hurricanes hitting New York?
Well, they told us last week, yes, there was a big story, that the hurricane season is mostly ahead of us.
Okay.
That was told to me by the Energizer Bunny.
Okay. Well, the Energizer
Buy your batteries now.
Energizer Bunny people, they need earthquakes, they need hurricanes, they need floods, they need lots of things where the lights go out. So we hope that
I have a whole bunch of batteries here that were bought 50 years ago, 60 years ago, because of a possible hurricane. But the hurricane season is ahead of us, and they expect it to be an active season.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to Urgent Agenda and your reports on the hurricanes and your famous little weather radio that always tells you what's going on.
Right.
All right, Bill. Have a great day, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Silvio. Talk to you next week.
We'll see you next week. Our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. What's happening in New York is really interesting with the police force. And they need to get their act together because a lot of people are leaving that city. And you got to feel safe when you go out at night. And tourism is a major part of New York City. If people don't feel safe, they're not going to go to the play. They're not going to go out to the shows. So they need to work on that. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.